Last night in Costa Mesa Police Chief John Hensley spoke to about 250 people during a community forum on the city's plan to enforce immigration law. According to the police chief, he said, quote, "We will not be stopping people on the street or in their cars to ask their legal status. If you are a victim of a crime, a witness to a crime, or have a complaint about the police, we are not interested in your status." But when asked to guarantee that officers won't abuse the policy, Hensley answered, quote, "I can't guarantee that. They're human beings. But if it comes to my attention, they will be disciplined." The City Council of Costa Mesa voted 3-2 in December to seek an agreement with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Once trained, police would start the deportation process of any illegal immigrant in custody for a serious felony or criminal street gang activity. And if this plan goes forward, enforcement could start in 6 to 8 months. Well, it's that lack of guarantee that has so many people in Costa Mesa concerned. Exactly how will the program work? Will it lead to racial profiling? And why does a crackdown on undocumented workers with the beginning of the closing of the Day Labor Center last year and now this, why does all of this sound like it's on the heels of the war on terror? Why is there this conflation of undocumented workers with crime? Yesterday, I sat down with Nativo Lopez and talked about things going on in Costa Mesa, taking a look at the history of the crackdown on undocumented workers and some of the inherent contradictions of cracking down on undocumented workers when an economy is predicated on a cheap source of labor. We also took a look at initiatives or proposed initiatives to raise the minimum wage in California to $8.75 an hour. And we also looked at whether the Democrats and the Republicans take for granted the multicultural flavor of the state of California. So here to talk about all this is an interview I did yesterday with Nativo Lopez, and he is the current president of MAPA, the Mexican American Political Association. He is also an organizer behind a new grassroots organization or coalition, if you will, Citizens for Constitutional Rights. I spoke with him yesterday, and here we go. You are in tune to KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM. This is Justice or Just Us. We are speaking with Nativo Lopez. Nativo Lopez, longtime activist in Southern California, current president of the Mexican American Political Association, and he has recently formed an organization, Citizens for Constitutional Rights, to take a look at things going on in the city of Costa Mesa. He is also currently working on a Fair Wage Initiative. Nativo Lopez, welcome to KUCI.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Can you begin? Listeners of this program are certainly aware of some of what's going on in Costa Mesa. Could you begin by just giving our listeners a little bit of background as what's been going on with Costa Mesa City Council, Costa Mesa Police Department, and the Mexican American community?
Sure. A couple of months ago, the mayor of the city began pursuing a policy of or seeking to adjust a current policy in the city to allow police officers to be deputized as agents of the Immigration Service to conduct functions of the Immigration Service in the city of Costa Mesa. This is a city of 100,000 residents. Approximately 40-43% of the residents are of Latino background. Of that, it's hard to say, but probably at least 50% of the Latinos that reside in the city of Costa Mesa are of immigrant background, immigrant stock, first generation. And the mayor, Alan Mansour, and his allies on the city council of five, essentially were successful in having a policy approved to deputize police officers as agents of the immigration authorities. Initially, his proposal was to permit them to conduct detentions, interrogation on the street, arrest individuals, bring them to the station, and then turn them over to the immigration authorities for further interrogation and deportation. Obviously, the protest that ensued and the internal discussions and debate of with other council members resulted in modifying his initial proposal, and according to the current policy, they would seek to only pursue the arrest of felons and have them arrested and turn them over to the immigration authorities. It's hard to say how that operates on the street, how they would determine that an individual is a felon or a suspected felon, and how they would pursue the investigation and the ultimate arrest or where of that individual. But that's something apparently that I imagine that they will try and work out in operation. According to the police chief Hensley of the city, it would take approximately 6 months to train the deputies, and between 6 and 8 months to train them and then to go operational. So there's still some time before us to change this policy, and essentially that's why we've brought together this group. It's a coalition, not an organization per se, of unions, community organizations called Citizens for Constitutional Rights to pursue the revocation of that policy in one form or one manner or another.
Now, there are a couple of things that you mentioned which I think raise a lot of questions and which really go to the heart of the matter. The first is that no one really knows exactly how this policy is going to work, how one identifies a suspected felon. Is that correct? I mean, that really raises a lot of questions.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, that's one of the objections that we've raised, other individuals have raised, organizations have raised with the city council. And in fact, we have a case that was reported to us, to me personally, last week, that we're still in the process of obtaining declarations of the victim to give us a bird's eye view of exactly how this would operate. This individual, woman, in her early 20s, she was driving in the city of Costa Mesa. She was pulled over by a patrol officer who, by himself, he asked her for her driver's license, and, you know, it's typical routine. So she gave him the driver's license, registration of the vehicle, and proof of insurance. The officer ascertained that the proof of insurance was only liability for the vehicle and not for her, not for the driver. So he had her get off of the vehicle, step to the sidewalk, and then asked her for her papers. She responded to him, I gave you all the papers that I have. And he said, no, I want your immigration papers. You know, I want to know if you're legal in this country or not. Even though she responded to him in English, and she speaks perfect English with no accent, she was all flustered and nervous, and she sat down on the curb. He told her to yell at her and told her to get up, that he didn't give her permission to sit down. And she told him that she was pregnant, and that she was feeling weak at that moment. And he told her, well, you don't look pregnant to me. You look just chubby. And he refused to allow her to sit down on the curb. Just coincidentally, another person was walking by, overheard this, observed it, had medical background of her own. She called the paramedics, who shortly thereafter arrived, and the paramedics wanted to take her to the hospital because of her pregnant state. The officer would not allow them. Finally, they negotiated it out. They were able to take her, and she arrived at the hospital with a blood pressure of 170. Yeah. Ultimately, she was given a ticket, an infraction for driving 20 miles in a 40 mile per hour limit, and for not having insurance liability for the driver, not just the vehicle. So that's how it's going to work out, Jared. As we know, racial profiling exists still in California. It operates on a daily basis. We have other cases now that have come to us, similar cases of sheriff officers badgering and berating people, demanding for them to prove up their immigration status, I mean, these are things that happen on a daily basis, and the only reason that more of this does not come forward to the public is because there's no entity out there, at least yet, but now there will be, with what we're doing, that will put a call out to the community to come forward to bring their complaints so we could file formal complaints with any police jurisdiction where this type of badgering, berating, violation of constitutional rights of individuals occur.
Now, what is current practice when police make an arrest? Are they able to inquire as to one's immigration status? I mean, prior to the city council resolution?
Mm-hmm. Current policy and generally practiced by most police jurisdictions is not to ask. Similar to our military, don't ask, don't tell. It's not germane to the infraction or the arrest that they're making, and therefore they don't ask. However, when individuals, for whatever reason, make their way into the county jail facility, Los Angeles County, San Bernardino, and Orange County now, typically there is a routine questionnaire that detainees are required to fill out, wherein they declare their state of origin or their birthplace and their immigration status, and whether those jail facilities have the capability to forward that information on to the immigration authorities for further interrogation to determine immigration status, that does or does not occur. In other words, there doesn't always exist sufficient INS personnel in the county jail facilities to follow up on those initial questionnaires for further interrogation, continued detention, and actual deportation proceedings.
It's ironic that one of the rationales for this policy is an attempt to reduce crime in the Costa Mesa community. Yet the worst thing any police department could do is foster negative police community relations. What impact will this policy have, and more importantly, what impact has this policy already had on residents of Costa Mesa? You mentioned that Hispanics are about 40% of Costa Mesa residents.
That's correct. Well, well, first of all, let's look at the premise. I mean, Costa Mesa is not known for a high crime city. Orange County generally enjoys one of the lowest crime percentage rates in the state and the country, for that matter. So you would think with the aggressive tone, the great urgency, the aggressiveness with which they seek to pursue this policy, that we're talking about a high crime city, high pockets of high crime in the city, and that is just not the case. We know for a fact that Mr. Mansour, the mayor of Costa Mesa, is now affiliated with the Minuteman Project. There is an individual on his planning commission who is an avowed white supremacist, has his own blog. His name is Mallard, and this is where this policy derives from. It's a Minuteman Project to pursue what they failed to successfully accomplish along the U.S.-Mexico border, pursue enforcement in the interior by way of capturing the hearts and minds of local politicians, county politicians, to have them pursue a policy of cooperation between the police and the immigration authorities. The legal basis for this policy, in fact, was inserted in a 1996 Immigration Enforcement Act under the Clinton administration that legally permits local law enforcement to cooperate with the immigration authorities for the purpose of detaining individuals that don't have immigration status in the local municipality. However, there's extremely few, if I'm not mistaken, only two or three jurisdictions throughout the country that have decided to pursue this policy. And the reason there's so few, the answer is quite obvious. You can't govern a populace. You can't maintain public order in a populace unless there's full cooperation of the populace. Full cooperation in the sense that, first and foremost, that the populace agrees to the laws of that jurisdiction, either culturally or they've actually learned this in school or in church or whatever. And secondly, the populace won't come forward to report crime, offer themselves up as witnesses, ferry out suspects in their own neighborhoods. We know for a fact that the most crime committed in any jurisdiction are crimes against property. And those are crimes that typically require the cooperation of witnesses to report information, to provide evidence, to provide information, to identify suspects, to come forward as witnesses to the police authorities. And when the populace does not do that, then crime goes unreported and actually increases in a given jurisdiction.
I want to remind listeners they're in tune to KUCI in Irvine. This is Justice or Just Us. We are speaking with Nativa Lopez. He's the president of MAPA, Mexican American Political Association, and one of the organizers of a coalition, Citizens for Constitutional Rights. And I want to get into some of the actions that Citizens for Constitutional Rights is calling for. But before that, if we could just finish up the background with a question. You've been involved in advocacy for the Mexican-American community for a long time, and certainly the scapegoating of Mexican-Americans goes back some time. You mentioned, the 1996 Terrorism Act. Certainly, Californians remember Prop 187. So I don't mean to suggest that what's going on now is really anything new. But it seems as if September 11th and the war on terror has kind of created a climate where it's once again acceptable to target the immigrant community. Can you comment on that at all?
You're absolutely right, and that's exactly why we link up the whole issue of the war with the challenges that we're faced currently with the onslaught of anti-immigrant policies, the rise of the Minutemen Project and other similar supremacist groups throughout the country attacking immigrants, talking for the militarization of the U.S.-Mexico border. Let's just say prior to the late 1970s, this practice of police and INS cooperation was a norm. It was happening all over the place, and so it took tremendous organizing within the immigrant community, mass protests, lawsuits, etc., dialogues with police chiefs, etc., to get them to understand the error of their way. The only way to curb crime in any jurisdiction is to obtain the full cooperation of the populace. Chief Daryl Gates, certainly not known for being a humanitarian or being friendly with the African American or Latino communities, was the first police chief nationally who came out against a cooperation between the police and the immigration authorities. In 1979, he proposed Special Order 40, which is an order in Los Angeles precluding the cooperation between the LAPD and the immigration authorities. And once that happened, we saw jurisdiction after jurisdiction throughout the state, throughout the country, pretty much abiding by that public Order 40, whether codified or not into law, not permitting police officers to cooperate with the immigration authorities. So it took struggle, mass struggle of people to turn this around, and you're absolutely correct, after 9/11, well, let me back up, that's really not true, because this legislation that was passed in 1996 occurred under the Clinton administration. The underpinnings of the Patriot Act were actually approved under the Clinton administration under a Democratic-controlled Congress. So I don't think that we should just lay the blame on this administration or lay the blame on a Republican-controlled Congress. These things were already in the works prior to the Bush administration, prior to 9/11, and prior to the war in Iraq. However, with 9/11, what's been created in the country is a psychology of acceptance, a climate of acceptance, a psychosis of sorts of acceptance, allowing the government to be more invasive in its intervention in the private lives of individuals. We see the president authorizing spying against individuals in the country domestically, and actual arguments by the Attorney General, the U.S. Attorney General, on behalf of the president, as he explained the other day in the hearings, his client, when in reality he is the client of the populace, of us, but yet justifying domestic spying authorized by the president. The focus on immigrants today, in our sense of history, is a huge diversion to what's happening in Iraq, and that's why we link the issue, because to the degree that we are successful in ending the war in Iraq and bringing our troops home, we eliminate the fig leaf and the pretext for the bashing against immigrants, the cries for the militarization of the border, the construction of a 700-mile wall, a new Berlin Wall of sorts, along the U.S.-Mexico border. Easier for us to grapple with and attack the issue of the 4,000-plus deaths that have occurred on the U.S.-Mexico border of individuals seeking to enter the United States.
Certainly. And it seems that the war abroad has now become a battle at home. Can you tell our listeners about the demands and the calls for action from Citizens for Constitutional Rights?
Sure. We've called first and foremost for the population in the residents of Costa Mesa, not just Latinos, but all residents of Costa Mesa, to not cooperate with the local police of Costa Mesa. Certainly that is a harsh, some would even say a radical, and some would even allege a militant response to the policy enacted by the City Council of Costa Mesa. But we're of the mind that we need to demonstrate once again to the City Council, the elected officials, to the social elite, if you will, of Costa Mesa, that when a community refuses to cooperate with the police are unable to perform its functions, its duties. Public order for all is put in jeopardy because the public safety of some are put in jeopardy by this particular policy. So we're asking people to not cooperate with the police, not to report crime, not to come forward as witnesses in an act of civil disobedience against this policy, to not become complicit in the further execution of this policy. Secondly, we're calling for a mass protest Saturday, April 1st, in front of City Hall, that's 77 Fair Drive, close to Fairview Street in the city of Costa Mesa, at 10 o'clock in the morning, a mass protest to demand the revocation of this policy. And also we've indicated that by April 1st, if the City Council does not revoke this policy, that we will launch a full-blown economic boycott of businesses in the city of Costa Mesa until the business community comes forward and demands of its political leaders to trash this policy as being bad public policy, bad for business, bad for civil society in the city of Costa Mesa.
It's interesting because on last week's program, we had John Earle from the OC Organizer, who has been following the Minutemen and Jim Gilchrist and the crackdown on immigrants for some time. And I had a caller call in, and a resident of Costa Mesa, really, really concerned about this call for an economic boycott, not quite understanding its rationale. And off the air, I try to explain that when you've got rhetoric suggesting that undocumented workers
or residents without papers are stealing government resources, not paying taxes, and not really contributing to the local economy, the best way to illustrate just how much we are dependent economically on this population is to have the population withdraw its financial support. And I think the message really got through to the listener. Is this the intent of the boycott?
It's absolutely the intent of the boycott. We're not calling for violence. On the contrary, a totally nonviolent form of civil disobedience, non-cooperation. In other words, I will not cooperate with my further victimization in the city of Costa Mesa. I will withdraw my personal economy from Costa Mesa. It's 40% of the city of Costa Mesa, a vibrant, economically well-to-do, does have its polarizations, but generally a well-off community, to demonstrate the economic power, the social power of this sector of the community that's now being victimized by the city council. We have the Minutemen in charge in City Hall. These are Minutemen politicians, and I need to say this, that this extends throughout Orange County, because this policy is also being proposed by Orange County Sheriff Mike Corona, who just raised $700,000 with the presence of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger at a fundraiser at one of the hot spots of Newport Beach. This is what the sheriff also proposes for all of Orange County. There's some five or six other municipal jurisdictions throughout Orange County that are considering a similar policy in Costa Mesa, and the sheriffs oversee not only unincorporated areas of Orange County, but they have contracts with the majority of cities in Orange County. So this is essentially what he would also seek to do, deputize sheriffs to operate as immigration authorities throughout Orange County. So this is the danger. If we allow this to actually be executed in Orange County, we run the risk of it spreading throughout the county and therefore throughout the state. The third action that I want to mention also, Jared, is that April 29th, we are convening a national immigration organizing conference in Orange County at the Anaheim Convention Center in Orange County. And the theme of this conference is Who's Afraid of the Minutemen? If you're not afraid of the Minutemen, we want you at this conference to work with us, with labor, with faith-based communities, with nonprofit organizations, with agencies that assist immigrants, to organize right here in the birthplace, the cradle of the Minutemen Project, of the Save Our State right-wing anti-immigrant organization. This is the birthplace of Proposition 187. This is the birthplace of probably the worst, the nastiest, the most racist anti-immigrant legislation, laws, policies, practices that we see percolating throughout the United States and currently being debated in Congress. In December, there was legislation passed by the House of Representatives, H.R. 4437, the sponsor whose name is Sensenbrenner. That legislation was approved by the House of Representatives, and it will be debated in the Senate during the month of March, and it actually makes it a felony offense for an employer to hire somebody that does not have status. It makes a felony for an individual to be in the United States without status, and it makes it a felony for my pastor, for my doctor, for my nurse, anyone that offers assistance to a person that does not have immigration status. It makes it a felony offense. This is a legislation that also calls for the funding to complete a construction of 700-mile wall along the U.S.-Mexico border, and has many other provisions that just smack of jingoism and nativism, and absolutely at cross purposes with the long tradition in our country of accepting, embracing immigrants to its shores.
Well, we'll be sure to put all that information on our website. We've just got a couple minutes left, and we know you've got a busy schedule, but wanted to end off by talking about the Fair Wage Campaign. But before I do that, I've got to ask about your party affiliation with the Greens. We've been talking a bit about how a lot of the roots of some of these policies, the cooperation between local law enforcement and immigration and naturalization, actually stems from a Democratic Congress or certainly a Democratic presidency. Could you explain, in 2004, you left the Democratic Party and joined the Green Party. Can you talk about that decision and what impact it's had?
Well, you know, I just finally got fed up with the Democratic Party. I was tired of being an embedded Green in the Democratic Party for, geez, 30 years. Some of the nastiest immigration policies that we've seen approved in the Clinton administration occurred on his watch. Under a Democratic-controlled Congress, the legislation to deny driver's license to immigrants, for example, occurred in a Democratic-controlled legislature in California, and I just absolutely refused to hold my nose any longer when John Kerry was the candidate of the Democratic Party opposing Bush, and therefore I changed my registration and became a Green Party member and have been active ever since. Working to build the party within the Latino community. The Fair Wage Initiative, to me, absolutely, I appreciate the ability now to work within a party that truly believes in a living wage. The Fair Wage Initiative that was initiated by Green Party members here in California that we're currently circulating to qualify for November ballot status would raise the minimum wage from $6.75 an hour to $8.75 an hour, and it also has a COLA provision to it, a cost of living adjustment provision. That means that the minimum wage would would be basically a fair wage. It would be a wage that would increase annually, indexed to the rate of inflation of any given year, and therefore low-wage workers truly would have a living wage. The current minimum wage in California is actually lower, comparatively speaking, than the minimum wage of 1968. So we need people to have a living wage, a fair wage. They plow that money back into the economy in terms of their consumption. That's good for business, and it just keeps the economy going.
And it's important to note that this initiative is different from the proposal of Governor Schwarzenegger, precisely because it's got that COLA, or cost of living adjustment, element tied to the raising of the minimum wage.
See, this concept of the COLA, it truly becomes the Economic Empowerment Act for low-wage workers, for immigrants. It's embedded in law. We don't have to go back to the legislature every third year, fourth year to fight it out with the opponents, with the governor. We Californians would approve this, and therefore low-wage workers could count on that being protected by law. They can count on the rate increase, and businesses could also count on knowing what the rate would be, and therefore plan for it in the development of their business.
Well, we'll certainly have to have you on again to talk further about the Fair Wage Initiative. But is there a website where listeners could turn to?
It's www.cafairwages.org.
www.cafairwages.org.
Yes.
Great. If you could, if we could close something that I think, it seems to me that a lot of citizens of either California, the United States, or even the two dominant political parties really take for granted the cultural diversity that they otherwise claim to honor and cherish. Certainly, it seems that the Democratic Party kind of takes the African American community and the Mexican American community for granted, as if, well, what are they going to do? Join the Republican Party? At the same time, there seems to be some misunderstanding of exactly how much contribution immigrants make toward all things that are America. Mm-hmm. Could we leave off by maybe, you know, talking about that?
Well, I mean, just from an economic standpoint, a person just has to ask him or herself, what do I contribute to the economy when I work, when I consume, when I pay taxes, if I rent? I'm paying them indirectly, property taxes, through the owner of that place. Culturally, just the language, the custom, the things that we eat, the music, you see the pervasiveness of the cultural influence of all cultures here in California, and that's something to be celebrated. Cosmopolitan diversity is something to be celebrated, not abhorred, or to build up walls. It's influence in our music. You cannot listen to music without some influence of Africa, without some influence of Latin America, and without some influence of Europe. I mean, these are the the three and more Asian Pacific cultures, a confluence of these cultures, and that's what makes California the beauty that it is.
Nativa Lopez, thank you so much for speaking with us today on Justice or Justice.
Thank you very much.